Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. This episode of Coach P's Perspective is brought to you by Manscaped, the world champion in men's grooming, the best in men's grooming. For me, I've always believed as an athlete and as a coach, if you look good, you feel good, you're going to perform good. So I like to turn to Manscaped products. I use their shampoo, body wash, deodorant, lip balm, cologne. You name it, they pretty much have it, right? World-class trimmers. And one of the things I love about Manscaped is this. Whenever we're looking at their grooming products, they are paraben-free, cruelty-free, dye-free. If I'm going to put it on my body, I want to make sure it's healthy and I want to make sure I smell good, right? So if you or someone you know wants to stay fresh, smell fresh, you want to walk out there with confidence, make sure that you go to manscaped.com, check out their products. And you can get a 20% discount right now using the code COACHP20. That is COACHP20. The world champions, the best in men's grooming, Manscaped. All right. Hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped. Today I have Alan Stein Jr. on here with us. And Alan is what I would consider like a coach of coaches, man. He's the elite of the elite. So he's a high performance coach. He's an author. He's a podcast host. He is a keynote speaker for some of the best companies in the world. And if we look at some of the names he's worked with, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, Steph Curry, I think we've heard of those guys a little bit. You know, worked at Pepsi, worked at Penn State. So kind of a list of who's who. He's got a couple books out, and I'll tell you what, I'm reading one of them right now, Raise Your Game, and it is absolutely phenomenal. We'll jump into that later, but Alan, thanks for being on.
Oh my goodness, it's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this since we put it on the calendar, and I love the work you're doing, and I certainly appreciate your kind words. So I'm looking forward to a fun convo.
Yeah, thank you. So well, let's do this for the listeners. Tell us about your background. Where'd you grow up at? We have a lot of coaches and athletes that listen. So maybe a little bit about your sports background as well.
Sure. So I grew up in a suburb of Washington, D.C., a small town called Gaithersburg, Maryland. Both of my parents were elementary educators. My mom was a first grade teacher for 30 years, and my father started as a teacher and then became a middle school administrator and principal. So I was taught and modeled for at a very early age the importance of teaching and coaching and being of service and pouring into others. So I have nothing but tremendous reverence and respect for anybody in the teaching and coaching profession, regardless of sport, regardless of age, or regardless of level. When my parents signed me up for my first recreation basketball team at 5 years old in kindergarten, I was immediately hooked. So basketball was my first identifiable passion. And I'm so thankful that here 40 years later, basketball is still a major pillar of my life. And I say that with immense gratitude that I've been able to not only make a living, but build a life around something I'm so passionate about. And I was a pretty decent public high school player, at least decent enough to earn a scholarship to play at Elon University down in North Carolina in the mid 90s. And while I was at Elon, I started to develop an equal love for performance training, for strength and conditioning and plyometrics and weights and nutrition and mindset. So when I graduated from college in 1998, I figured what could be better than combining my original love of basketball with my newfound love of performance training, and I became a basketball performance coach. And I did that for almost 15 years, had an opportunity to work at two really internationally renowned high schools here in the DC area that have produced over a dozen players currently in the NBA, Kevin Durant being the most notable of them. And then that led to opportunities with Nike and Jordan Brand and USA Basketball. And I got a chance to work events for guys like LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash, and Stephen Curry. So basketball has been very, very good to me. Coaching has been very, very good to me. And it's afforded me the opportunity to learn from some of these unbelievable athletes. And I now take all of those lessons that I've learned and I show folks how to apply them to their lives and to their businesses. So I left the basketball training space and the coaching space 5 years ago to pursue corporate keynote speaking and writing full time. And it was a great decision. It was a nice natural progression and iteration in my career. And I love what I'm doing, but I still most identify with being a coach. I mean, technically I'm a keynote speaker and an author, but if you had to put a label on me, I'd want that label to be coach because I just have so much love for coaches.
Yeah, you know, and what you're doing, I mean, whenever you're keynote speaking, you're sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, you're sharing these things you've learned along the way and that you also teach. And that's coaching, right? Good teaching is coaching. And that's what it really is. I'm a teacher and a coach, and I come from, my dad was a teacher, he's a Hall of Fame coach in Oklahoma. He was a principal, and then he's retired now. But I don't want to jump past that. Being in a family that valued education, growing up with educators, How do you think that impacted or influenced you with what you're doing now?
Well, the most important thing that it influenced me is, you know, and I would hope that most teachers feel this way. My parents love what they did. Like, they loved teaching. I think most would agree, and I say this with a huge smile and a wink, most do not get into teaching for the money or for the accolades or for, you know, the benefits and so forth. They get into it because they love helping young people. They love being of service. They might love their specific, whatever they teach specifically. You know, if they happen to be a history teacher, they might have a tremendous amount of passion for history, but they do it for very altruistic reasons. So I was raised with two people that modeled loving what you do. And that seed was, you know, embedded deeply in me. So I've always used that as kind of my North Star into what I choose to pursue. You know, when I was in middle school, I had a coach say something to me that I still to this day consider the best advice I was ever given. And that is, find something you love to do, find something you're naturally pretty good at, and then find where those two things intersect. Mm. So find what you're passionate about, find what you're talented in, and then find where those two things crisscross. And wherever those two things crisscross, that is your strength zone. And the more time you can invest in your strength zone, not only will you perform at a higher level, but you'll have a much higher sense of joy and fulfillment as well. And I've stayed true to that recipe my entire life. I mean, for the first third of my life, that intersection was as a basketball player, the sport I was passionate about. I was decent at it, not NBA decent, but decent enough to play at a small school in North Carolina. And then when I realized that I didn't have the talent to play after college, at least not formally, then I decided to stay true to that and say, okay, well, coaching is something that's in my blood. You know, the ability to communicate and articulate a message and to teach and instruct and to motivate and inspire happen to be things that I'm fairly decent at. So I'm passionate about basketball and performance work. I'm pretty good at being able to coach and inspire and push and serve. So I'll be a basketball performance coach. And I did that until that no longer was, you know, giving me the fulfillment that I was striving for. So I decided to be the corporate keynote speaker that I am presently. So the environment that I grew up in, having parents that modeled that for me and who afforded me the opportunity to play sports and to be coached by other people and to learn these lessons. Yeah, I'm incredibly grateful. And now I'm trying to be that same type of parent for my three children.
So good. So good. Absolutely. So good. You know, like you said, that intersection of your passions and your strength zone is huge. And real quick, I often say this, like, you can't fake passion. You can't, like, you can feel it, you can hear it. And like right now, like, I can hear the passion in your voice, man. You're passionate about what you do. I love it. It's got me motivated. I just got back from a workout, but like, I have a feeling I might work out again after this podcast.
I love it.
Yeah. And then communication is huge, right? Being able to write, being able to express your words, coaches being able to take complex things and simplify them. And you're elite when it comes to communication. I can tell that already. And then I know through, you know, reading your book so far, how did that develop? Is that sort of naturally a gift for you, or is that naturally a gift and you honed it along the way?
My guess is most of it was honed. I do think communication is a skill that anyone can learn and anyone can improve. Now, like most things, I do think we're all born with some genetic predispositions. You know, I think some people might be born maybe having a little more natural charisma than somebody else. Somebody might be born, you know, there's a variety of things that I think can means we're starting kind of with different clay, but then ultimately we mold that clay however we want. So I've always been fascinated by communication in a variety of different art forms. And I've also worked really hard to improve my communication, you know, and I think one of the things that's helped me immensely and, you know, is, so I'm technically a keynote speaker, but there are two other forms of communication, two other art forms of spoken word that I study religiously to improve my ability as a keynote speaker. One of those is hip hop and the other is stand-up comedy. Now, you can probably see right now, I'm not most likely never going to be a famous rapper, and I'm probably not going to be headlining any comedy showcases anytime soon. So I don't study those two different crafts in order to be like them. I try to look at general communication characteristics that I can acquire and or emulate and say, okay, both of those forms of spoken word, they have to have a certain level of physicality. They have a certain level of rhythm. You know, they use words and are very selective in the terminology that they use. You know, so there are things that I can learn from those things to become better at keynote speaking. And I've always had that mindset. So while I grew up in the world of sports and I grew up surrounded by some amazing coaches and I got to learn from some amazing players, I was always studying things outside of the direct sport and coaching world that I tried to bring to my ability to coach to try to articulate those messages better. Because I'm a huge believer that the real key to effective coaching is connection. Is being able to truly connect with those that you're working with. And this is true in teaching or in coaching. I use those words very almost synonymously, is being able to say, okay, if I can connect with you, if you are a wrestler and you're on my team and I can truly connect with you to the point that you know that I love you and care about you as a human being first and as an elite wrestler second, now you're going to be so much more open to receiving whatever it is that I communicate to you in the first place. We're going to have a much higher level of mutual trust and respect. I'm going to be able to push you harder and further because of that. So anything that I can do to increase connection, whether it's an audience and I'm on stage or it's a one-on-one coaching client, my goal is to increase connection. And in order to do that, I study things well above and beyond just the art of coaching. And doing all of that, I think, has helped me grow and improve my ability to communicate. And you know, connection and communication are really the foundation of effective coaching.
Man, so good. So good. That's with my coaching staff. And then even in my book, the number one chapter, the first chapter is about relationship building. Well, with our coaches, it's about relationship building. So, and I love that you were talking about studying outside of your craft, outside of your area. First off, I'm a hip hop head. I love hip hop. I have my nice. Pretty much my entire life. I like it because we often say, okay, I'm a wrestling coach, I'm a basketball coach, I'm going to study other great coaches, and we should, right? But looking outside of that, we only know what we know, and sometimes we kind of put ourselves in a little box. And one of my big beliefs is principles are principles, and once you know them, you can apply them almost anywhere. So if I can take a principle from a CEO that owns a business, I can now, as a CEO of my wrestling team, implement those same principles. And so with you in communication, that's awesome that, you know, you're looking at hip hop, you're looking at comedy, implementing those things. And, you know, for everybody listening, first off, don't leave these great thoughts up to your mind. You'll forget. I forget everything. Write these things down. So I know for me, I'll be going back and listening to this and writing these down, because these are incredible nuggets of wisdom. So let's jump forward real quick. Okay. So in your book, Raise Your Game, I'm always big on like the subtitles of books, right? Because there's like little, like this is what it's about. This is the grit in there. High performance secrets from the best of the best. And I'm about halfway through the book. It's amazing. But if you were to narrow down, and you have another book out, right? So Raise Your Game, the Sustain Your Game. What are a few, I usually call them principles of success, but let's call them like secrets from the best, right? If you were to draw out a few of those that you could share with us, what would those be? I mean, these are like you said, you worked with just some elite athletes, elite speakers, CEOs of businesses. We have a mutual friend, Cody Foster. You've spoken at his business before at Advisors Excel. So what are a few of these principles of success or secrets that help lead to success that you could share with us?
Well, I appreciate your kind words so much. A few thoughts pop to mind. One, and my publisher always gets irritated with me when I disparage my own subtitles. But when I wrote that subtitle, I wrote the word secrets with a huge smile and a wink, because the stuff in the book, they're not secrets. These are principles that are, you know, available to everybody and have been for many decades. And these aren't things that I invented or came up with myself. I've just happened to curate them and organize them in a certain way that I hope resonates with folks. But there is no secret to what it takes to be an elite wrestler or to be an elite coach or to run an elite business. They're basic principles, as you just said. And I love the way that you framed, you know, principles are principles. It's your ability to apply them is what matters most. So I just kind of put that in the subtitle, hopefully as a way to kind of draw people in. And I also want to say that I write the book that mirrors what it is I'm going through in my own life at that time. So in essence, I write the book that I need to read myself. And I find that not only liberating and empowering, but I find it incredibly therapeutic to dive into something that I need to improve on. So when I wrote Raise Your Game, it's right after I had made the transition out of basketball performance training and into corporate keynote speaking. And I wanted to figure out, okay, what do I need to do to ascend to the top of my craft, to be the best keynote speaker that I'm capable of becoming, not be better than anybody else, not to make any list or to be put on, no, just how can I be the best that I'm capable of? So that was really the impetus for writing it and really enjoyed that. And then, you know, the most recent book, Sustain Your Game, I came to the conclusion that, you know, reaching the proverbial mountaintop is only phase one. Staying there and still incrementally improving and enjoying the ride with high fulfillment, that's almost more challenging. And it definitely takes up a larger portion of our life, like the climb. And I'll always be on the climb. I'm never going to, I mean, I certainly don't want to imply that I've reached that mountaintop. I'll always be in pursuit of it. But once I kind of reached a certain level, now I had to figure out, all right, how can I sustain this for long periods of time? So both books were written as if I was just holding up a mirror to myself. And I've come to learn that when there are things that I need to learn or things that I'm struggling with, I'm not the only one. So I write the books in full service of someone else. I mean, the fact that you're halfway through Raise Your Game and you're finding it helpful and valuable means the absolute world to me. I mean, that's why I wrote it. I'm so thankful for that. And that really is the difference. So Raise Your Game, what are the principles? Because I'm a principle guy just like you, that we need to adhere to have very high performance. And a few that jump out immediately, one, and I learned this directly from Kobe Bryant back in 2007, was that the best never get bored with the basics. That if you want to be good at anything, you learn to stick to the fundamentals and you work towards mastery of them during the unseen hours. You know, I don't know very much about wrestling other than the fact that it takes an unbelievable amount of mental toughness and physical conditioning. So I'm certainly far from a wrestling expert. But I can promise you, if I met with someone who is like you, you'd probably have a handful of, I don't know, 3 to 5 fundamentals that a wrestler needs to work towards mastery of to lay the foundation to be the best wrestler they can be. And that's what they need to stick to. Then you talk about your friend that, you know, runs Advisors Excel, an unbelievably successful business with a tremendous culture. As complex as that business may be and as massive as it is, I guarantee he could come up with another 3 to 5 fundamentals that are the reason that business is so successful and the reason that they stick to those fundamentals. So in any area of life, whether it's parenting or business or basketball or anything in between, we have to identify what the basics are and we have to work relentlessly towards mastering those components. Another thing that I learned and put in Raise Your Game that I've learned from high performers in every area of life is they do a brilliant job blending confidence with humility. They are confident in what they do because they've earned the right to be confident because they've put in the work. You know, if you have put in hundreds and hundreds of hours leading up to, you know, wrestling season or a specific wrestling meet, you should be confident you're going to go in there and put the other guy on his back because you've earned the right to be confident and you've put in the work, the blood, sweat, and tears to do just that. However, the best of the best brush that with massive humility and say, one, I always want to be open to feedback. I always want to be open to coaching. And no matter how good I get, I know that I can still get better. Even if I'm the best wrestler in all of you know, wherever in the United States, I have to recognize that I can still get better. And lastly, yet the humility will let you know that on any given night, anyone can beat you. Yeah. But same time, on any given night, you can beat someone else. So I don't care if you have an unblemished record, you're 110-0 as a wrestler. If you don't go into that next match with a little bit of humility saying this guy could put me on my back, there's a good chance he will. And you need to have that humility. And it's the ones that blend confidence, humility so masterfully are the ones that perform at a high level. And those are two that just jump out immediately as far as Raise Your Game is concerned.
Yeah, those are excellent. And I love the terminology unseen hours. So, you know, the things that we do behind the scenes that nobody else sees. And we're in a day where, and I'm not against social media. I use social media. I think that we can share positive. I love following your social media, your Instagram page. We can share wonderful messages on there. But again, we're also kind of in a day and age where like your workout didn't happen if you don't post it to social media, right? Everybody's right. Like putting everything out there. And when you look at the best of the best, they're doing a lot of things behind the scenes that nobody else sees. And I think that as coaches, that's something that's really important that we talk to our athletes about. Hey, man, Steph Curry didn't get to where he is. He doesn't shoot threes like he shoots just because he was gifted. Is he gifted? Yeah. But does that guy just put in the work over and over and over? Absolutely. Like more than as much as we think, times a lot more, right? So he's putting in so much work behind the scenes for you perfecting your craft. You're putting in so much work behind the scenes. So the unseen hours, that's a great way to narrow that down and to also, you know, help us to realize if we're going to perfect our craft, there's got to be lots we're doing that nobody else is ever going to see.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. And I always want to give proper credit. So my good friend, Drew Hanlon, who started Pure Sweat Basketball, who I believe is the best NBA skills trainer in the business. He was the one that coined that term. And I heard him, he was talking to some of his players and Drew works with Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine, like many of the best young players in the NBA. And he basically told those guys, look, you know, it's what you do when the arena is empty. It's what you do when the cameras are off. It's what you do when the cheerleaders aren't dancing that will determine the player that you'll be. And those are the unseen hours. And he said the more you're willing to commit to excellence in the unseen hours, then the better you'll perform when the lights come on, the arena is packed and the cheerleaders start, you know, waving their pom-poms. And I immediately gravitated towards that mindset. And like I do with most things, said, all right, well, that doesn't just happen in basketball. That applies to every area of our life. I mean, every area, personally and professionally, individually and organizationally. And the people and the groups that understand that your commitment to excellence during the unseen hours is what determines how well you perform, those are the ones that get it. And so for me, perfect example. Right now, at the time of this recording, I'm in Las Vegas. I actually have my three kids with me. They're going to get to see me speak to a group tomorrow that's in the franchisee space. And, you know, I'll be on stage for roughly an hour, but the amount of work that I've put in leading up to that hour, those are all the unseen hours, you know, all the due diligence that I did studying their company and their core values. I interviewed a few of the people that will be in attendance to get their perspective on it. I've had two different pre-event calls with the guy that hired me to learn everything I can about their culture, about what's going well, about what they're struggling with. You know, I've customized the keynote to deliver directly to them and speak their language. And I've rehearsed that keynote, you know, numerous times to be prepared. So tomorrow I'll be on stage for 1 hour, but the unseen hours that it took to lead to that hour that will determine how well tomorrow goes, that's ultimately what's most important. And I try and take that approach with every speaking engagement. And you just highlighted arguably the best example of that is a guy like Steph Curry, who will go down in history as the greatest shooter the game has ever seen. And I don't think anyone can conceptualize, I can hardly conceptualize it. And I know him is the amount of time he puts in when no one else is watching, you know, to be able to do the types of things he does on the court. I mean, you were talking about now at this point in his life, I mean, he has shot the ball millions of times, you know, since he was a little guy. But all of that is what leads to his ability to perform on the court. So anyone listening to this right now, whether you're listening through the lens of being a teacher, a coach, a parent, a spouse, a member of your community, no matter what that is, figure out what are the basic building blocks to being good, and then figure out how you can work on those during the unseen hours to put you in a position to be the best at your craft. And to me, that's what I mean. That's not a secret. I didn't just make that up. People have understood that longer than you and I have been breathing, and that's not going to change anytime long after you and I are gone, but it's important that people conceptualize that and really put that into practice.
Yeah. I love that. You know, you talked about the secret thing. It's funny because we know these things, but we don't implement these things a lot of times.
So true.
But we want to know like, hey, what are the special, like, hey, like, no, for real. Tell me, like, what does Steph do? What does he do, right? And then you'd be like, hey, he does the basics. He shoots every single day, right? His form is perfect. So we go back, and then it does draw me in, the secrets. But the secrets aren't really that secret. it's taking these things and doing them over and over. You kind of led me into what I think is going to be, or what is going to be my next question. So I love to look at performance habits for the best of the best, right? In every area and see what they do, and how can we draw those into our life. For you, you are very high level at what you do. And thank you, by the way, for sharing what you do with keynote speaking, because I have an hour-long keynote coming up in a few weeks. I'm about to steal some of your tips there. But
please do.
What are some of your daily habits? And I'm talking some of the things, whether it be because you're a performance guy, right? So whether it be your workout, your nutrition, a daily reading, whatever, what are some of the things like, hey, when Alan wakes up in the morning, these are the things that are sort of like the non-negotiables throughout the day?
I'll give you a couple of things, and some of them will be very tactical, and then some of them will be a little bit more esoteric and evergreen. And, you know, especially when it comes to the tactical, and you had mentioned social media before, which I do agree can be a double-edged sword. I believe social media can be an invaluable tool for learning. It can be an invaluable tool for sharing. It can be an invaluable tool for connecting and meeting people that you may not have had a chance to meet in person. But that's only if you use it correctly. I think one of the issues with social media is people play the comparison game, and they say, okay, you know, I see this guy who's a high performer, or this girl who's a high performer, and here's their morning routine. I'm going to do their morning routine so that I'll be like them. And that might be an okay start, but it doesn't necessarily mean that what they do is right for you. And the reason I say that is I'm happy to share some of the pillars of what I do on a regular basis, but I'm by no means saying that everyone should do them. I'm not even saying that they're right or that they're good. I'm just saying they've worked for me, and I've honed some of these things over time, but every person needs to figure that out. And a lot of that starts with even what time do you get up in the morning? You know, ever since I was a child, I've always gravitated towards the early morning. Like even when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, I would be wide awake at 6 in the morning, just ready to get going. And I still gravitate towards the early morning. So I choose to wake up fairly early, and by early, you know, anywhere from 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning. And then I choose to start every day doing something that engages my mind, my body, and my spirit. So on some level, can I move my body? Now that could be something as simple as a couple of stretches, a couple of yoga poses, to something more intense, like a full workout or going for a long run. I try and do something that stimulates my mind. That could be playing some type of word puzzle. That could be listening or watching an educational video or listening to an awesome podcast like yours. And then I try and do something that engages my heart, something that brings up emotion. This could be reading or watching something. This could be conversation with one of my kids or a loved one. But I try to involve all of those faculties within the first hour of my day. Now, I say it that way because what I do is I just kind of put up this framework and I try to fill these things in. I don't necessarily prescribe and say, okay, tomorrow morning, I'm going to wake up at 4:45. And from 4:45 to 5 o'clock, I'm going to do this. And from 5:01 to 5, I don't have to be that specific. Now, to some people, they might prefer that. And I do love structure, and I do love consistency, and I do love organization and planning, but I don't have that preset. Some of the other things that I do fairly consistently, I make my bed every morning. I'm a huge believer that discipline is the key to freedom and fulfillment, and making your bed is a sign of discipline. You know, it takes me about 8 seconds to make my bed. So why not start my day with an act of discipline? Most mornings I do a 10-minute meditation. I didn't do that this morning because I'm in Vegas with my kids and they were all sleeping this morning. So I maybe we'll get that in later in the day. But I try and do, you know, some of these things that just lay the groundwork and the framework for me to have the best day possible. And that usually involves that. And those are kind of tactical things. On a much more esoteric level, the biggest thing that I try and do is just be aware, mindful, and present as often as I can every single day. That whoever I'm with, in this case, I'm with you and I'm with you virtually. You know, I know that my kids are over here in the room right now, but you have my full undivided attention. And my focus right now is having a wonderful conversation with you to benefit your listeners. You have my, I'm fully present with you. Now, whenever this conversation is over and I close my laptop, we're going to go out to the pool for a little bit and we're going to move on to do something different. And then I'll be fully present with my children at that time. I also want to make sure that I'm always aware. You know, awareness is always the first step to improvement. You will never improve something you're oblivious to, and you will never fix something you're unaware of. So I try and be aware of the good, the bad, and the ugly that's going on in my life. You know, I'm aware of the things that I'm grateful for and appreciate. I'm aware of the struggles and the challenges and the adversities I have. I want to be aware of all of it. And then lastly, I try and be mindful, and I try to allow myself to feel however I'm feeling with absolutely no judgment or self-criticism. And then I try to be very thoughtful and intentional in my responses. So, you know, every single day of our lives, we'll be faced with some level of adversity. Now, this could be very minor adversity. You order something at a restaurant and they bring you your order incorrect. Like, that's pretty minor. Or it could be something really major. You find out a loved one is sick or terminally ill. And then that's a pretty broad spectrum. No matter what type of adversity I face, I try and be very mindful in how I approach that. I try to learn lessons from everything. I try to apply those lessons moving forward so that any adversity I face is not lost in vain, that I actually gain something from the experience. I also hold myself fully accountable to everything in my life. I recognize that most of the things that happen are outside of my control, but I absolutely control my response to those things and whether or not I'm resisting those things. And I find that, you know, trying to practice all of that stuff on a regular basis is what's moving me in the right direction. And I'm far from perfect. I make plenty of mistakes. I'm flawed and I'm fallible, but I like the path that I'm on. I'm proud of the progress that I've made. And the more consistently I can do these things, then I believe I'm creating a better life. And in this case, not just for myself, but for my three children as well.
Yeah, those are awesome growth habits. And I love that you said, like, hey, these are the things that work for me. And you kind of leave room in there, even for yourself, to be able to kind of modify or to do the things you need to do that day for everybody. And I was just reading in your book yesterday, and actually I shared a little thing on my social media. I have a very similar thought process, and it sparked it in my mind. But having, I'll ask you this. Okay. So goals, process, systems, you're talking about that. It's kind of what I shared. I have a very similar feeling or thought process on that. I like goals, they're good. They motivate you, push you forward. But when it comes down to it, it's process and systems. So can you share with us your thought on that? Because you put it wonderfully in your book.
Oh, I'm so glad you went in this direction. And I do feel so much alignment between you and I and our perspectives. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with goals. In fact, I think goals can be a tremendous way to add clarity and to help provide direction. So you make sure you're going in the right direction. I mean, if for lack of a better term. But once you've created a goal, in my opinion, this is just my perspective, I think you can go ahead and put it on the shelf and then focus your full attention on the process, on the behaviors, the habits, the micro skills, the things you need to do on the daily to increase your chance that goal will actually come to fruition, that you'll get the result that you desire. That if you spend too much time hoping, wishing, dreaming, and thinking about the goal, you're taking your eyes off of what's most important, which is what can I do now? Or what can I do today that takes me a little bit closer to that? Similarly, and the beautiful part about that is if you focus on the process, you will increase the chance that you'll hit the goal. Like, you'll increase the chance that you'll get what you were aiming for in the first place. So it's incredibly effective from a goal standpoint. And the other part with goals, and this is something came to fruition a couple of years ago, and I still have a ways to go, but I've made good progress on it, is learning how to detach my self-worth and my self-belief and my self-confidence from the achievement of the goal. See, I grew up in an environment where, you know, that falling short of a goal, I felt less than. I felt unworthy. I felt like I wasn't good enough. I felt bad. I felt like I had failed. And I've come to kind of rewire my thinking into saying, yeah, I'm not going to hit every target that I aim for. When I do hit it, I'm going to celebrate it for a couple of moments, be proud of that, enjoy the fact that I hit it. And that's great, but then move on. If I fall short of it, I don't beat myself up over it. And I don't look at myself as being less than. I ask myself, what can I learn from this experience? And how was I complicit in not reaching my goal? Like, what could I have done differently to have reached it? And I just learn a lesson and I smile and move on. So whether I hit a goal or I don't, I've learned to move to the next play. But the reason the second part is so important is there's a lot of people, especially in the sports world and the coaching profession and in athletics, they attach their self-value to their results. And that's a slippery slope when your self-worth is tied to your achievement, because that means when you achieve, you feel good about yourself. When you don't, you fall short, you feel lousy. And, you know, I just think life is too short to feel lousy a significant portion of the time. You know, even take something, you know, like a sport like wrestling. Like, I want you to be prepared to go out on the mat to do the best that you're capable of. I want you to have the best attitude and give the best effort, do everything that you prepared for during the unseen hours and give it your best. But if for any reason you don't win that match, I don't want you to feel less about yourself. Now, you can be disappointed. You can be upset. Nothing wrong with those feelings. In fact, I encourage you to feel them. They might be the fuel to move forward, but I don't want you to feel less than. I want you to say, okay, I didn't win the match as I intended. Let me figure out why. What could I have done differently? Sometimes the things are within your control. You know, sometimes they're not. Sometimes you have to be able to say the other guy was just better. No, I mean, I know in wrestling, you guys are somewhat of the same, you know, weight. So you're usually not significantly bigger or stronger than you, but you can say, hey, this person has a lot more experience or whatever it may be. They were just simply better than me today. And I'm going to learn from this and be able to take that moving forward. So for me, you know, I probably hit my goals at, I don't know, a 50% rate. Half the time I hit them, half the time I fall short. But the best part is I feel good about myself 100% of the time, whether or not I hit the goal. And learning how to detach from those outcomes has been really, really, really helpful. And just so no one thinks I live in a fantasy world, you know, I still get a little disappointed when I fall short of a goal, and it still stings. You know, when I don't get the outcome that I want, you know, it still hurts for a moment. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't let it make me feel less than. And I learn something from it, and I know I'm better equipped moving forward.
Man, that is huge. So huge. Yeah, that's often used the terminology desired outcomes versus goals, right? We all have these desired outcomes. We want to be All-American, national champion, state champion, whatever. And detaching yourself from that outcome that it showed. And, you know, for a lot of my athletic career, and I wrestled since I could walk, you know, I would do that. So if I was winning, I would feel great about myself. I would feel loved. And then if I was losing, it would be the exact opposite feeling. And so getting to a place where you enjoy the process, you enjoy the systems, you can lay it all on the line every single time. And then at the end of the day, like you said, if you don't reach your desired outcome, yeah, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be upset. You're going to feel a little emotional, but not letting that bog you down, right? Learning from it, getting better, moving forward, and realizing like you're still the same person. You're still valuable. You're still loved. And the people that truly love and care about you, your coaches, your family, your parents, your teammates, their feelings didn't change because you lost. So a lot of times we do that to ourselves, but it's a real thing, right? And it adds a lot of pressure. And when it adds a lot of pressure, you don't perform as well. So if you can go in there and just lay it on the line and not worry about the outcome as much, right? And of course, we want to win, got to be honest. But whenever we detach ourselves from that outcome, yeah, I mean, you can play free. You can compete free. And that's a great place to be.
Absolutely. And that needs to be the goal. You know, there's an old kind of somewhat cliche quote that I actually like it because I think the substance behind it is really solid. But then there's a few kind of almost disclaimers I'd want to make around it. And that is, you don't win or lose, you win or learn. And I love that mindset. And I know that's a little motivational speaky and a little corny and cliche, but there's some truth to it. I mean, that way you go into every situation saying, I'm either going to hit my desired outcome, or I'm going to learn a lesson that will allow me to do better in the future. So you really do win either way. Now, the reason I think that quote is a little bit incomplete, one, it makes it sound like you either win or you learn, which means you don't learn anything when you win. And I think that's a mistake because I absolutely think you can learn something when you win, and you should learn something when you win. And the other reason I think it's a little incomplete is it makes it sound like it's automatic. Well, you either win or you learn a lesson. And that's not the case. You have to be very intentional about learning that lesson. Like, you have to look for the lesson. You have to have the courage and the vulnerability to say, this did not happen the way I wanted. I need to figure out why. I need to learn something. It does not happen automatically. In fact, when most people lose, they pout, they sulk, they blame, they complain, they make excuses. Like, they do everything except learn the lesson from it. And that just makes it, you know, that makes it even more of a negative experience. So I think the general premise behind win or learn is pretty sound, but I always want to throw those disclaimers out that it's not automatic and you should absolutely learn when you win, you know, because just because you won doesn't mean that you did the best that you were capable of. You know, if you and I were wrestling, which would be pretty comical, you'd pin me in about 3 seconds and you'd win. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean you did the best you could. In this case, that just simply means you were facing an inferior wrestler, which was me. But you can develop bad habits. You can learn to be sloppy. You know, if you just happen to be more talented than the people you're going up against, that is a really slippery slope. Because then when you face someone who is of your level or better, you're going to be in a lot of trouble because you've developed some lazy habits or some sloppy habits because you were just looking at the outcome as the only thing that mattered. So, you know, I've been a part of teams, you know, when I was the performance coach at DeMatha, where we were usually the favored team. There were times after a win that Coach Jones, who was one of the best coaches I've ever been around, he would lay into the guys and say, yeah, we won by 15, but we were capable of beating them by 40. And we didn't, because you did not play hard. You did not play smart. You guys took selfish shots. So I don't care that the scoreboard said we won. We did not get better today. And that's where I have a problem. On this, along the same lines, there were a couple of times where we lost the game. And he said, I have never been more proud of you. You guys played flawlessly. You executed. You were unselfish. You played as hard as you could. The ball just didn't go in the basket as well as we would have liked tonight. But I am so proud of you. And even though we lost tonight's game, you guys were outstanding. So we can't put everything onto the scoreboard.
Yeah, those are phenomenal thought processes, man. Absolutely phenomenal thought processes. So mindsets, you know, so I'm a mindset coach, and one of the lessons, one of the things that we talk to our athletes about is a new definition of success, a new definition of failure. Like you said, you might win a match, you might win a game, but walk away and know that you didn't perform your best. Or you might lose and walk away like, hey, I performed really well. So a new definition of winning may be like, hey, I went forward, I left it all out there, I gave great energy and effort, whatever. You know, a new definition of failure may be like, I held back, I was very conservative, I wasn't trying to score points. So each person's got to figure that out. But you know, you've worked with these incredible athletes, these incredible CEOs of companies. Just real quick, what's the importance of mindset? And then maybe a couple little mindset keys that you've picked up along the way.
I mean, I don't want this to sound so cliche, but for the most part, mindset is everything. I mean, you know, now if you're trying to be an elite level wrestler or an elite level basketball player, the physical component absolutely plays a role. I mean, it, you know, if you want to make it to the NBA, it would be helpful if you're taller and athletic. Like it's not, you know, it's not a guarantee, but you know, if you're 5'4" and can't jump on top of a curb, you're going to have some difficulty making the NBA, no matter how skilled you are. So physicality plays a role when it comes to athletics. But outside of athletics, when we start talking about the real world or the business world, then the physicality component is less important. Now, I still believe in taking a holistic approach. And I think that even if you're the CEO of a company, you know, you don't have to be 7 feet tall and you don't have to run the 40 in a certain time or bench a certain amount of weight. It's in your best interest to be fit because it'll help you with your energy levels. It'll help you, you know, in a variety of capacities. But the physicality component is kind of thrown out the window, which means all we're left with is mindset. And that really is everything. And some of the staples of the mindset teaching and coaching and speaking that I do, the first is I believe the most important mindset to have is simply, I'm going to do the best I can with what I have where I am. That's it. I'm going to do the best I can with what I have where I am. Now, inherent in that mantra means you're going to eliminate a trilogy of behaviors that trip most people up and that I believe are habits of weak-minded people. And I'm trying to say that in, you know, with a smile, with no judgment, but, and that is blaming, complaining, and making excuses. I believe blaming, complaining, and making excuses are habits of the mentally weak. And again, I say that with a smile. I'm not judging someone that does them because I used to be the king of blaming, complaining, and making excuses. So I get it. I have nothing but empathy and compassion for someone that's in that place on their journey. But once I stopped doing those things consistently, it was like a weight vest was taken off. You know, I'm so much more emotionally nimble and I'm emotionally agile. And if you're not emotionally agile, then you're emotionally fragile. And blaming, complaining, and making excuses make you emotionally fragile. Because ultimately what you do when you do those things, you're taking responsibility and accountability off of yourself and you're putting it on somebody else. And I don't believe that's what champions do, you know, not in business, not in basketball or anything in between. So to me, mindset is about doing the best you can with what you have where you are, avoiding the temptation to blame, complain, or make excuses, and understanding what you have control over and what you don't, and choosing to put your attention and effort and focus into things you have control over, which is your attitude and your effort. And to me, if you can do those things somewhat consistently, then you're developing a winner's mindset. And, you know, one thing that I do find really interesting, you know, I realize that you know, you have a wrestling team, but wrestling is, for the most part, it's an individual sport. I mean, you are on the mat and it is just you and the other guy. So it's a little harder to blame, complain, or make excuses when somebody puts you on their back and you know, you get pinned. You know, I guess you could say the mat was slippery, or maybe the guy did an illegal hold and the ref didn't see it, whatever. But it's harder to blame, complain, or make excuses on an individual sport. But we see it everywhere in team sports and in business. You know, you blame the referee in a basketball game, or you complain that your teammate, you know, he's the one that passed the ball too low, that's why you dropped it, or turned the ball over, or, you know, the whatever it is. I find that in basketball and business, people are very easy to scapegoat somebody else for why they didn't perform at the level they're capable of. And that's one of the key tenets of what I work with folks on, is eliminating that and saying, yeah, what you said might be true and it might be valid, but it's not helping. And you're taking responsibility and accountability off of yourself, which is not something that winners do. So how are you complicit in not getting the result that you wanted, or whatever that may be?
So good. So good. I feel like we can write a book off of this podcast.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yes. Awesome. So, okay. I don't want you to be, humble. We talked about confidence and humility earlier, but I don't want you to be humble as far as, you know, I just want you to be fully open with this. A question that I like to ask, because I believe God's given everybody different gifts and abilities, and it's part of our responsibility to hone those and use those. But I want to call it your genius. If you were to narrow it down and say, like, hey, this is something I'm really gifted at, but I've also worked really hard at, like, what is your genius?
I don't know if I would label it as genius, but one of the things that's helped me in everything I've ever done is I care. I guess as kids would say today, I give AF. Like I just care. I care about my performance. I care about my contribution. I care about the people I serve. I genuinely care. You know, like tomorrow, this keynote that I'm giving in Las Vegas, I care about offering value and saying something meaningful and memorable to these people. I care about doing a good job in front of my kids. You know, I care about leveling up my ability to work towards mastery of my craft, and let this be another repetition where I get an opportunity to hone my message and improve my ability to articulate and communicate. So caring, I think, is part of that for sure. And then I guess, you know, I always feel weird using the word genius in the first person, but, you know, the ability to communicate. Like, I've never had a problem clearly articulating my thoughts or a message to others. Many times that's through spoken word, but many times that's through my writing, whether that's an Instagram or a Facebook post or a book that, you know, you've been kind enough to invest in and read. I've been able to convey my message fairly fluidly, I guess we could just say. I've never been at a loss for words, and I've never had a problem expressing how I feel about something. So I guess that's kind of one, again, more of a big picture macro level, and then one that's a little bit more tactical.
Yeah, and both of those are apparent. You know, apparent in the way you talk, the way you write, the way you communicate, that your communication skills are elite and that you do care. It made me think about Michael Jr., the comedian. I heard him telling a story one time, and he's a phenomenal comedian, but he said he was doing a show and his thought process was changed as he was doing the show, but he often would go there to get laughs, right? He's a comedian. He wanted to get laughs. And after he had this thought process change, it was, how can I help someone today through my communication, through my comedy? And he said everything changed for him. It was no longer about me getting laughs. It was about, do I want to be awesome at what I do and great at what I do? Absolutely. But how can this help somebody else because I care about them? And so it made me think about that when you talked about all these things that you want to be great at and that you are, you know, great at. It's because you care.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you know, I think one way to kind of put a big red bow tie on everything that we've just discussed, especially with what you just said, is the mantra of transformational leadership. And I try to use this to guide my own life. And that is the mindset that it's not about me, it's about you. Now, this doesn't mean that you think less of yourself or you don't take care of it. No, nothing could be further from the truth. I'm a huge, staunch advocate for self-care and filling your own bucket first so that you can pour into others. But it's about saying that, you know, like tomorrow when I'm on stage here in Vegas, that talk is not about me. It's about, you know, what are their struggles and their pain points and their challenges? What are the things they need to celebrate, the things they're doing well? What are the things that I can pull out of my toolbox that they'll be able to use moving forward? So I'm just the conduit to the message. I'm just there to pay it forward. It has nothing to do with me. Now, I'll share personal stories and I'll certainly, you know, for lack of better word, name drop some of the players I've worked with, but I'm doing that in service of the audience. Because when I say, hey, the first time I met Kobe Bryant, it changed my life for their buy-in and believe in and their focus and their attentiveness to what I'm about to say. Because if I just go there and say, hey guys, it's important to focus on the fundamentals, that might just get lost. But if I say Kobe Bryant, one of the best to ever play the game, told me that the best never get bored with the basics, that's how you make that message sticky. That's how it'll resonate and hit them right between the eyes. So yeah, everything I'm going to do tomorrow is in complete service of them. And I try to do that with everything in my life now is say, okay, it's not just about what I want and what I find important and what I like. What do you find important? What do you like? What do you value? How can I learn more about you? Because the more I can learn about you, and I do that through actively listening and taking a genuine interest, then the more I can customize the message that I'm going to share with you. So to me, you know, going through life saying it's not about me, it's about you, and being of service to others and making a contribution to others, in essence, makes you the most attractive person in any room. Everyone, you know who everyone wants to talk to at the party? The person who's the best listener. Like if I'm actively listening and I'm genuinely curious in your past and fascinated by your experience as a wrestler, and I look forward to reading your book and hopefully hearing you speak one day, like I'm genuinely interested in all of that, as opposed to just trying to shove down your throat everything that I've ever done. And let me tell you, and I only know that because I spent a lot of my time with that mindset. I was so insecure about myself that I felt I had to prove that I knew something or prove that I belonged in the room, that I spent so much time talking and not enough time listening. And that's one area that I'm really trying to get better at, because I think that the higher degree you can listen, it'll make what you have to say so much more meaningful and impactful. And as I said earlier, I'm much better at that now than I was 5 years ago, and certainly better than I was 10 years ago. I'm far from perfect, but I like the progress I've made and I like the path that I'm on.
It's one of the things I love about podcasting. It really is. So two things that we've talked about here. One is I get to practice being an active listener, right? Because I love hearing the stories and the wisdom of people that I bring on. You know, I've gotten a master class, right? So I've got to sit here and get a master class. And then, so that's part of it. And then another one is being where your feet are, which was one of your TED Talks, but it's getting to just like fully focus in the moment right now, because our lives are so busy. And I have four children. So you talk about, you have, you know, your three children. And so I'm in the same boat. Like we're out here, we're running around all the time, right? It's great, but it makes a very busy life. And you're doing that plus the things that you do to make a living. And it's so valuable just to be able to just focus in. So when we podcast, I get to just be 100% present in the moment. And so it's a beautiful thing to be able to do. So I'm glad that you brought those up.
Well, you do a tremendous job with it, man. This has been a really fun time, really pleasurable experience. You are an elite active listener. And that's made this conversation so much fun. I almost feel awkward doing most of the talking, but I've learned that when I'm asked to be a podcast guest, that's my role. And I also believe in role clarity, and every team, everybody needs to know their role. You know, that the reason you brought me on is because you're kind enough that you want me to share some of these things. So if I just sit here and I don't say anything, then we're not going to have a very compelling show. I just want to acknowledge you and say how much I've enjoyed this. This was a fun opportunity, and I really appreciate what an amazing listener you are.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And by the way, your podcast is phenomenal. I just binged on it the other day. So
thank you.
All right. I always like to end the podcast with this. These are sort of some quick hitter questions, but there's three here. You can answer all three, expound upon them as much as you want, or you can just pick one. It's up to you. So call us the three H's. I want you to tell me about a highlight, a hardship, or a hero in your life, or a little of each. Highlight, hardship, and hero.
Okay. Well, highlight, you know, being the father to my three kids, and I'm so excited to bringing them here to Vegas with me. They haven't seen me speak, in a couple of years. So it's a really cool experience. You know, even now, you know, yours is the second podcast I've done today. So basically for the last 2 hours, I've been staring at this webcam, and they've been very patiently occupying themselves over here. And I kind of did that intentionally because I want them to be a fly on the wall to see what it is that I do for a living and when I travel and what my life is like. I want to be able to model that for them. Not that they'll need to follow in my footsteps, but just for them to see, you know, because they don't always get to see that. You know, I'm often traveling and speaking, and I do most of my podcast when they're not with me, but I want them to get a taste of that and how important this kind of thing is to me. So that is definitely a very recent highlight. Yeah, I mean, I've certainly had plenty of hardships and adversities. I mean, you know, the one that immediately comes to mind was the pandemic, which I think many people would list as a hardship. But the reason I list it is that the two things that fill my bucket the most are watching my kids play sports and speaking on stage in front of people. And both of those things were sidelined for, you know, well over a year. So for a year, I didn't have an opportunity to do two of the things that fill me up. And I struggle with that. I mean, I was a little depressed. I was a little anxious. I certainly was on that roller coaster of some mental health that a lot of people were. And I say that in the truest sense of vulnerability, because I know I wasn't alone in that. So that was definitely something that was a hardship, but I found ways to refill my bucket without doing those two things. And I also found ways to kind of pivot and do some different stuff. So I was able to serve folks virtually. And now 25% of the keynotes I give are virtual engagements. You know, when I wasn't able to watch my kids play sports, I was still able to do other things with them that gave us that type of connection and that bonding experience. So I found a way around that hardship. And yeah, so I'll answer with those two H's.
All right, excellent. Well, Alan, thank you so much for being on. Hey, if you would real quick, share with us your website, your social media, where can we find you? And I'll make sure that those things are in the show notes as well.
I'll be happy to. So alansteinjr.com is my primary site. I have a supplemental site, strongerteam.com, that has info. I have a course. I do some one-on-one coaching. As you mentioned, I've got a podcast and the books. And then I'm very easily found and accessible and responsive on social media at Alan Stein Jr. on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So if anyone listening to this, if you enjoyed part of our conversation or you want to ask a question, or even if you want to challenge something that I said, don't hesitate to throw me a DM on Instagram or LinkedIn. I'll make sure to get back to you. And then certainly if anyone's interested in either Raise Your Game or Sustain Your Game, you can get them wherever you buy books. Most people tend to go to Amazon and or Audible. And yeah, I hope you enjoy those. And man, this was so much fun. I really, really, really appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate you. And it's been a blessing having you on. Absolute blessing. So everybody listen, may God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey, before you go, I'd like to encourage you to go over to fluxfootwear.com. Flux Footwear. The Flux Adapt is one of my favorite shoes. These things are an everyday wear. You can also wear them in fitness. Very light, stylish, unique. I'm a pretty minimalist shoe kind of guy, and Flux Footwear basically checks off every single box I'm looking for. So go check them out. And if you use the code COACHP10, that is COACHP10, you'll get yourself a 10% discount on the Flux Adapt shoe at fluxfootwear.com.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep. Pop, lock, and rock. Coach P, who never stops.